and red, a war between the black and white, a war between the heart and the ego. Why don't you come on back to this war?
Good morning. Here we are again. It's Wednesday, and it's Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Bowler. Whoops. I have to take that off YouTube. Sometimes the next song starts and you forget about it. Anyway, that was, of course, Leonard Cohen, There Is a War. I like that line, war between those who say there is a war and those who say there isn't. That's a subject for a show. Maybe that'll be what we talk about today. Anyway, yes, I'm going to talk about a bunch of different things, some articles I've been reading, some things I've been thinking about, some things that have happened, and I'd really like to talk to you. So I'll just give you that number right off the bat, 503-231-8187. And of course, as usual, I've got a few community events to send your way. You can always drop them off in my box here at KBOO. 20 Southeast 8th, if you have events, you can send them in to me. If you do, I'll start reading my my special KBOO email more regularly. Sometimes I kind of forget about it because I got my regular personal email. Anyway, you don't need to know about all that, but it is PAULRKBOO, PaulRKBOO at gmail.com. And yeah, send me a notice of your community events. So the rent control debate, presented by the other community station in town, X-Ray FM and Portland Forward, is tonight, 6:30 to 9, the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta. It's time to debate rent control in Portland in response to the housing crisis. The state legislature is considering lifting the statewide ban on rent control, and members of Portland City Council are openly discussing what rent control might look like in our city. We need more public discussion of this important and controversial set of policies that will shape housing in the city and the state for decades to come. And so you're going to have economist Dr. Gerard Mildner of the PSU School of Business Administration and Margot Black, an organizer with Portland Tenants United, going at it. And Jefferson Smith of X-Ray in the Morning will be moderating the debate, and the whole conversation will be recorded for future airing on that radio station. So that's tonight. May 3, Alberta Rose Theater at 6:30 p.m. rent control debate. Legislation 101, how the Oregon State Legislature works and how... Oops, didn't get that second line there, but you can go to their Facebook page, and I will attempt to diligently link to all these on my page for this show. Hosted by the PDX NAACP tonight, 6:30 p.m. as well. Portland Community College, 2305 Southeast 82nd Avenue, my way, at the corner of Division. Legislation 101, how the Oregon State Legislature works and how to make it work for you. That's the full title. Confused about the legislative process? Think you need to be an expert before you can lobby? Then this training is made for you. Learn about how a bill becomes law in Oregon, what works best, petitions, emails, Facebook, Twitter, phone calls, visits, how to say what's on your mind and be heard, which bills are top priority, blah, blah, blah. Come meet the NAACP Portland Political Action Committee and see you can get involved. That's tonight again, 6:30 p.m., Portland Community College, Southeast 82nd and Division. This Friday, May 5, 5 to 7 p.m., Cinco de Mayo rally, Overcoming Oppression with Power. It's at the Chute Park Aquatic and Recreation Center, 953 Southeast Maple Street in Hillsboro. Join us to our first Cinco de Mayo rally, Overcoming Oppression with Power, on Friday, May 5th, where I just said, 5 p.m. We will be having cultural performances by musicians and local artists. Come and listen to our accomplishments and what's next. It's also a time to recognize the great organizing work by our Hillsboro leaders and organizers. That's millennio.org y Voz Hispana Cambio Comunitario. That's Friday, May 5, 5 p.m. in Hillsboro. Fighting Against Fascism, Past, Present, and Future, Saturday, May 6, 4 to 6 p.m. There's a long and proud history of American anti-fascist organizing. We are currently living a time when the face of fascism is changing and new threats are emerging. Sierron, I hope I got that right, Molloy, who's with Twin City GDC, Mike Crenshaw of KABU, and Tyrus of Pacific Northwest AWC will be sharing their experiences with organizing against fascism for over 30 years, where we currently stand in this fight and the future of this work. Mike Crenshaw was born on the south side of Chicago and raised both there and in Minneapolis. He is a world-class MC and rap artist and poet who has emerged on the national international stage as a teen in the late 80s. Mike was embroiled in the violent streets of Minneapolis, leading groups to physically confront white supremacist gangs that were enforcing their will at local parks and social scenes. After beating back the neo-Nazis, excuse me, the violence remained both in the streets and from authorities. He decided it was time to escape it all and move west to Portland, Oregon. And we, on our part, appreciate that. I'm sure that was Minneapolis's loss. He says, I wanted something new. At the time, my ties with the streets were still pretty strong and my social life involved drinking and fighting. I was ready for a change. Okay, Sierron is a husband, father, soccer coach, and union activist in Minneapolis. He was a co-founding member of Anti-Racist Action Minneapolis 30 years ago, has been deeply involved in anti-fascist organizing for decades. He's also an elected union chief steward at his workplace and a member of the Revolutionary Union Industrial Workers of the World. I'm just going to cut this short. And the last speaker, Tyrus, was raised in Portland with the invasion of the neo-Nazis in the late 80s and early 90s into the punk rock scene, the brutal murder of Mulugita Serrat, and the lead-up to the Tom Metzger trials in Portland. He got involved in Sharp, PDX Baldies, and anti-racist action organizing physical resistance against white supremacist Nazi gangs in Portland. This is all hosted by African and Native Solidarity and Black Rose Portland. Again, Saturday, May 6, 4 to 6 p.m. That's at, I didn't have the address, SEIU, I believe, up on Southeast Foster around, 64th or so. I believe I noticed that on Facebook. But as I said, I will make my utmost effort to link to all that on Facebook. And of course, you can get all these events and more at the Portland Resistance Calendar, available as a podcast and blog on Friday, starting on Fridays, of course, at kbo.fm/resist. Okay, so here we are. So what got me started on what we're going to talk about today is, oh gosh, all the stuff that happened this weekend. There was the, I went from one march to the other on Saturday. I went to the wildness at 82nd Avenue with the right-wingers, Trumpistas. Some people denied they were for Trump, but they had all these Make America Great Again banners. Lots of American flags, lots of a lot of fairly burly types, but you know, it was fairly, there's a lot of women. Maybe a couple of people of color on the Trumpista side, but obviously extremely white and generally largely male. And like I said, a lot of big burly guys you probably wouldn't want to, I personally wouldn't want to tangle with. I know there's people who wouldn't shy away from that. And then there was, so maybe 100 of them, and I don't know, maybe 50 counter protesters. It was harder to count because they were kind of more spread out in Montevilla Park there at 82nd and Gleason, where they started. And the right wingers were cooped up in the little mini soccer field there, just kind of an odd thing. I wandered in. I got taped a part of a conversation with the, my God, I forgot his name, the right wing leader there from Vancouver. He certainly seemed their leader. He was the one who spoke on the sound system at some length and kind of got things started. I'm embarrassed. I don't remember his name. Someone might call in with it. I even was there to do a little tape of somebody else interviewing him. So I'm not going to go into all that. It was kind of odd. Ted Wheeler, at a certain point before the march started, kind of took three steps into the fenced-in area, and I didn't actually see here what happened. Apparently, he was basically not welcome, and he turned around really quickly with a very, I don't know, kind of tense look on his face, and walked straight back towards 82nd and left. He was there for all of maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And then basically they walked all along 82nd. The cops said they had to stay on the west side and the counter protesters on the east side. Many of the counter protesters didn't obey that. They remained on the west side. The cops didn't do anything. The right wingers went back to the east side. They were following. It was just a kind of a bizarre little thing that people were kind of doing a little moving dance blockade with a loud music over a loudspeaker, and it was just kind of bizarre. And there was some tussles here and there. I didn't see any really severe, I didn't see any real physical contact, no weapons that I saw. Then apparently three people, I left because I went to the climate march, three people got arrested. I'm not sure exactly why. And then the big controversy over the two buses that were TriMet buses that were apparently pressed into service by the police at the orders, I assume, of the politicians, but I'm not sure. There's an article about that in the Mercury. You can read. And they apparently, it wasn't just that they, you know, did it for the right-wingers. They apparently offered it to the counter-protesters. They denied. They refused for obvious reasons, not wanting to get on the buses with a bunch of the people that they were just protesting. Anyway, that's that. I'll leave it there. But it was certainly created a ripples in my Montevilla neighborhood. And of course, I neglected to mention the whole backdrop was that the long-standing Montevilla parade, which kind of kicks off the Rose Festival, was canceled because of threats and counter threats. And apparently there's going to be right-wingers participating along with the Republicans. There was threats from one anonymous email. I'm not sure exactly the reality of the whole thing, but it was canceled. Apparently there's a request for added police protection. The Portland police said they couldn't give added protection, but then of course they had their massive anti-riot squad presence there at the march that happened anyway. Who knows? So, and then I went to the climate march, was really quite inspiring. It was a program largely organized by OPAL, Environmental Justice Organization, with wide participation by many different Portland groups of people of color, ethnic groups. There was strong Native American participation, strong African American participation in the program, much less so, obviously, in the march, this being such a white city. And, you know, obviously, it being started at Dawson Park, one who's older and has lived in Portland, or at least lived here years ago like I did, could only help but notice this largely white crowd in what had been a kind of one of the hearts of the African American community. And had it still been that, there would have been at least people on the periphery from the African-American community checking it out. There was very little of that, which I found kind of depressing. But of course, I wasn't really, didn't really engage myself with that community when I lived here in the 80s and 90s. Didn't really know that much about it, even really to my embarrassment now, because everything was happening so rapidly, starting in the 90s. But it was an inspiring march. The presentations were really great. And it was great to see it led by people of color, even at this late date of gentrification in this town and late date of the onset of extreme climate change. But we do what we do. And I thought it was really, really well organized and well presented. And it's good to see that people really getting a dose of what people of color, people from various different communities, a woman from Palau talking about the impact on island nations in the Pacific, people talking about the impact on low-income communities, communities of color in terms of unequal impacts of climate change and so many different things. So there's audio of that. Hopefully we'll have that for you at some point in the not too distant future. Then, of course, on Monday, May Day, another march, another big, whatever you want to call it, certainly called a riot by the media and other people, and talked about here on KBOO Airwaves yesterday on the Abe and Joe talk show. I personally disagreed with their presentation of it. And I encourage people to check out a variety of sources and talk to people. Talk to the people who are supposedly black blockers. There was a very large, largest I've seen since I've been back in Portland of the black bloc, which were people dressed up in black, and a lot of them with hoodies, a lot of them with the bandanas, face covered, and three large spiders representing the three foundations of anarchism, mutual aid. Oh gosh, I already forgot, even though I do consider myself tangentially anarchistically inclined. Autonomy, probably. Anyway, maybe somebody can call me up with that. That's the thing about being a talk show host. You start talking and you think you know what you're talking about, and then sometimes you don't. And it doesn't necessarily always come off so good. But here we are, and I'd like to hear you, what you have to say. 503-231-8187. So I wasn't there. At the end, I was had low energy. I hate to say it. I just didn't feel totally a part of the scene. I was kind of tired. I just didn't feel like I had it in me to go through a couple hours of march and likely confrontations. Likely because obviously the police are seemingly more under Ted Wheeler. That's what some people, Greg McKelvey was talking about on the KBOO News in Depth last night. He felt that the police reactions to protests are amping up under Wheeler as opposed to Charlie Hales. Again, I wasn't there for that end of that, so I can't tell you my perspective on Monday's events. But this whole issue of violence, nonviolence, of I think there's a generational issue. I actually called in on yesterday's show mentioning that I thought there is a generational issue, which Joe mentioned because someone said, "Listen, old man," and he felt very offended. I don't mean to laugh about that because I do think that young people probably might do well to avoid that. But, you know, I think those of us who are of a certain age should also think back to certain slogans of the 1960s, like don't trust anyone over 30, and the serious generational divide that fueled the 60s rebellions. Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about, because I can only go sort of once over lightly all these different things. I saw I Am Not Your Negro last week at go plug for Academy Theater, my local neighborhood theater in Montevilla. Cheap. And a lot of different showings there. Anyway, I wasn't here to give a plug for them, but so I thought that was a really amazing and just incredibly powerful, just really hit me hard, that movie, I Am Not Your Negro. And I wanted a read from some of this article. I Am Not Your Negro Gives James Baldwin's Words New Relevance by Mallory Hugh, Y-U. I unfortunately didn't get the site that I got this from. I should always do that so I can give credit where credit's due. So I want to read, maybe as we go on, if people aren't calling in, I'll read some more of this. We've got a caller, Jim, if you just hold on for a second. Let me, Raoul Peck says that Baldwin always spoke directly to his audiences then and even now, and his words were frank and direct without being cruel. Baldwin put the onus of change squarely on people in positions of power and privilege. What white people have to do, Baldwin said once, is try to find out in their hearts why it was necessary for them to have, and he uses the N-word, it was necessary for them to have a nigger in the first place, because I am not a nigger, I am a man. If I'm not the nigger here, and if you invented him, you, the white people, invented him, then you have to find out why. And the future of the country depends on that, whether or not it is able to ask that question. Because, as Baldwin wrote, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed if it is not faced. And boy, is it in our faces. With the Black Lives Matter movement, with the Dakota Access struggle, with Trump's election, with this rise of the so-called alt-right. And, you know, I was really struck by Baldwin's just deep, deep sensitivity. I mean, I am also shocked. I'm continually shocked at myself, the gaps in my education that I think I'm attempting to remedy. We should all read Baldwin. We should all have read and assimilated Baldwin and been more ready to take on these challenges. But, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, the just continuing assault on African American and Native American populations, and Baldwin's really just deeply sensitive to history and culture, and he was so one of our most astute observers and critics. I say our because he clearly says I am not your Negro. I am aware of that, but he is also very deeply American, and he's very deeply aware of the nuances and the depths of American history. And he's very aware of Native American history, other histories. So if you haven't seen I Am Not Your Negro, go see it. This article, I Am Not Your Negro, gives James Baldwin's words new relevance. Did I Get James Baldwin Wrong? By Stephen Casimir is another good article. There's much good articles. There's a really good review here on The Old Mole that happened a few weeks ago. I encourage you to go to that. I'll try also to link to that. So let's go to our first caller. Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just calling about, you were talking about the anarchist movement and the people in the streets on Portland. And it seems like every time somebody's trying to have a peaceful demonstration, these guys show up. I'm all about everyone's ability to express their opinion and to peacefully assemble. But it seems like every time something happens, these guys come along and they create mayhem.
When you say these guys, it's sort of like this sort of blanket sort of, it seems like you don't have much relationship to people who might be in that milieu.
Well, regardless, I don't.
And okay.
Frankly, I don't want to have any relationship with people like that, because what the people are doing out there peacefully assembling, they're trying to get their message, you know, out there peacefully, and that's the whole reason. And frankly, when they start breaking windows, burning cars,
I don't think any cars were burned yesterday, were they?
Well, I don't know.
I mean,
about
on Monday.
On the news,
Monday.
It was talking about the police SUV that was burnt. You know, that's just ridiculous. And, you know, just a few months ago, people were marching and you know, reference to Trump, and they were hitting people's cars. I mean, that's totally out of line.
So what's your political guy. What's your political persuasion?
I'm an independent.
Uh-huh.
And I am not a Trump supporter. I'm a Bernie supporter.
Okay.
And I, you know, I feel that the whole thing was wrong. Bernie should be our guy. But the bottom line is I'm a peaceful guy, but you know, I believe in gun ownership, if you know, things like that, and I still just think it's wrong for these guys to create this mayhem.
Okay, well,
personally, if they were to do that to my car, it'd be a whole different issue.
All right. Well, you know, this was talked about extensively yesterday. You may or may not have heard about that. You may not have had a chance to weigh in there. And I don't mean to say it's already been done and we shouldn't do it. In fact, I opened the discussion, so I welcome your comment. I'd like to get into the whole. There's so what I called in to talk to Joe and Abe about, because he was basically saying very similar to what you're saying, and Abe was agreeing with him, and a number of callers were agreeing with him. What I was saying is I don't know how old you are. I'm 58 myself, so I'm not quite the 60s generation, but I'm definitely not the generation of the largely younger people who do tend to make up the black bloc. And it's not all guys. There are some women involved. There are some people of color involved. I saw myself. So it's largely white, largely male, largely young, but not exclusively. And I personally know, I would never out any of those people. Even if I got called in for questioning by the police, I would never name anyone that I thought might be involved. But I think I do personally know some people who for probably 30 years, I've known people who gravitated to that milieu, hanging out among anarchists, as I have for many years, and in self-styled radical circles. I have rubbed shoulders with people, you know, who sort of even before, you know, the black bloc came onto the scene, you know, kind of burst on the scene in Seattle, but a little bit before that, before 1999, it started to make its way into the United States. It really started, as people say, largely in Germany, amongst the so-called Autonomen, the kind of radical squatting faction that were radical anti-imperialists and had pitched street battles with the police. They were basically, a lot of it was trying to defend their occupied houses, against gentrification and against the property system, against the capitalist system, and they had no bones about fighting it out with the police. And as I said, a lot of it was actually defending their own liberated spaces. That was a big part of it. So that's an important part of the history. Here, we're not able to gain our own liberated spaces in any way like there. The capitalist system, the property system, has much more control over buildings. There's easier. It's in Europe. There's, for various reasons, they're able to squat and occupy spaces and have, you know, their own cultural opportunities independent from the dictates of the cash and capitalist system. Anyway, that said, so it migrated to the United States. So I've hung out with, you know, people like that in various capacities for a long time. So I think I know something about the politics. I think I know something about the attitude that feeds into that. I have never really participated in it. I myself have never been a big one for throwing rocks. And again, often the way it gets to the point of throwing rocks, breaking windows, all that stuff that, you know, become the focus of these conversations is more of a complex sort of dance of the way that these marches go. You know, sometimes it's directly provoked by the police. They start picking people off, then people start reacting. Sometimes it's more provoked by the protesters themselves. But it's there's no doubt that the people who engage in black bloc don't like the police. They have a thoroughgoing critique of the state and state power and the monopoly of violence. So there's political questions involved here. It's not just, you know, these people have these tactics are bad. There's, you know, there's principles involved. But, you know, I have not engaged in that sort of thing myself, you know, for whatever reasons. Maybe it's my temperament. Maybe it's some, to some extent, my feelings also of tactics and strategy. So that's a long, I just want to state clear my position on this. I know it took up a long time there. So getting back to your point, what I said to Joe and Abe was that maybe you should look at the generational thing. These people, you know, I just made a list of things that have happened just in the last 5 or 6 years that if I was a young person growing up and I saw, you know, the Occupy movement burgeon and then get repressed, the BP oil spill, it's not a spill, the gusher just going on and on, Fukushima, just the, all the news about climate change that I think a lot of young people are way more sensitized to, partly because it's their future, largely because it's their future. But like in the, especially in the Portland area, there's a lot more young people who are way more educated about global warming and environmental science because there's so much environmental education in the Portland area. I think that's an important thing. The police killings that have become way more visible, the Black Lives Matter movement, this stuff, all this stuff has happened in the past 5 years. And, you know, just climate change, the impending, I think a lot of young people just feel like they just don't have more time. I think they're...
Well, it just seems like you say, the last 5 years, there's a powder keg that's ready to explode.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just, I see that myself. Like you, you know, I'll be 58 this summer. You know, I've done everything the old-fashioned way, raised my family, worked a job, you know, still doing that. So it, for me, squatters, you know, there's a place for it, you know. I just think there's so many problems out there that we need to address. I don't know the answers. I don't know that anyone does. But
well, that's
I
the just, thing. We do,
I just feel that violence, throwing rocks, breaking windows in businesses, that's not the answer. And, you know, if I was one of those business owners, I'd be very upset, you know. That would drive me to violence. And, well, I that's about all I had to say about it. I just think these marches would go much better if these guys would not show up. You know, if you're going to show up, like all these other people show up, they're marching, their faces aren't covered, you know. I'm all about free speech, but if you've got a mask on your face and you're hiding your face, well, your motives aren't pure.
Okay, well, that's one view, and that was expressed a lot also yesterday. I'm sure a lot, there's people who are listening who agree and disagree, and I appreciate your willingness to step forward and make your feelings public. And we got a couple other callers, so thank you very much,
nice
Jim.
Nice talking with you.
All right, likewise.
Have a good day.
You too. Well, I've got some other reactions to that, some other things to say, but let's go straight to our next caller, Samantha. You're on the air.
Hi. It's really great to be on, and I've got a couple of comments kind of in lieu of this, but kind of an overall just view of what's going on. And a lot of it is what happened was planned. Portland and across the nation, the United States, we've got a large history, very long history of oppressive police tactics against anybody trying to change their situation. This being said, I believe in community, and as a population, we are our weakest links. We really are. It may not be within our short human time frame, but in the grander picture, you know, ecological services, mindset, that kind of thing, we are our weakest links. And until we come together, this is a separatist movement. The Black Blocs are separatists. They are a little more radical. We all kind of need to have a self-sufficiency mindset and not in the island human, because no one person or nuclear family could ever do all the jobs necessary to be happy and sustained. But if we come together as communities, unite, and we don't think about stuff in the very, very violent language of mine, my car, my job, my family, but in Ubuntu, which is, you know, that linking tribe kind of mindset, will be able to move smoothly.
Well, I don't know about tribe. I think tribe is a very problematic term to use in that connotation. I think just a little cautionary. That's very fraught with historical and cultural connotations. But anyway, go ahead.
No, that's fine. And I only say that in the communication of Ubuntu in the small village.
We don't live in a small village. We don't live in tribal society. We live in a very divided, separated, oppressed, repressed.
That's correct.
The idea that the Black Bloc are separatist and that there's not vast separations and divisions like everywhere all the time. In fact, I would say that the reason they might be so seen as so separate and feel so separate is really the inability of the quote left or progressives or whatever to actually get over the ideological and cultural differences that have made us unable to create any kind of real structure of resistance that has any chance of doing anything. And
when you give power to those titles, what you're doing is you're saying,
what titles?
That team, my team, left, or any of our political, like right wing, left wing, Republican, Democrat, Independent, we're creating teams. And the team mindset is not a rational mindset.
I hear where you're coming from, and I totally disagree with you. This is a large argument. It's an ideological. You have an ideological framework, and I have an ideological. We all have ideological frameworks, and we need to draw those out. And I hope you don't feel offended. But
I have rational conversations.
Okay.
The
left that I mean is a historical fact. It's like that that has emerged out of whatever the French Revolution, the various Marxism, right? But to call it teams, I mean they were basically this viciously marginalized and beaten down, emerging out of the origins of capitalism, that the capitalist system, enclosed the commons and forced people to work wage slave jobs,
yes,
to work for the
absolutely.
Bosses. That's what created the division. The people who created the really an opposition to an attempt to get over those divisions is really the so-called left. Now, how it's changed and evolved, but the fact that fundamental, basic, original division oppression has always remained, still remains, and that's the war that I taught, that Leonard Cohen was talking about at the very beginning, that there is a war that we cannot deny. How we respond to that war?
Do we need to have war, though? That's the thing.
No, there is a war. The war exists. The war has existed for hundreds and thousands of years.
Do we have to continue it?
We have to end it, but how we end it, that's where the difference is how we end it. How do we fight to end it? How do we struggle to end it?
We walk away. We stop.
Well, you see, that's the ideological difference we have. That's the ideological difference we have.
We stop driving. We build community.
I see, but I understand. I disagree with you, and we could go on and around about this for the rest of the hour. And I appreciate that we drew this out, this basic ideological difference there's the war between those who say there is a war and those who say there isn't. That's a line from the Leonard Cohen song. And we haven't even gotten over that conflict.
Sorry, I don't want to do with my dog, the N-word. Go on.
Well, no, I just said that there is a war between those who say there is a war and those who say there isn't. That's a line from the Leonard Cohen song. And we have not even addressed that. We continue to not address that and all the other ideological conflicts. We never get over that. And so, what happened the origins of the Black Bloc movement in the late 90s, early 2000s, was they actually moved towards coming together, towards having common agreements. They actually, after Seattle, after some other things happened, some of the different groups that were doing these intense marches against what was called globalization at the time, they actually realized that they couldn't continue to have the kind of infighting between even the between the Black Bloc and, you know, the Black Blockers said that there was peace Nazis on the other side. You get these, you know, these divisions and conflicts that endlessly repeat themselves. They actually came together, had discussions, and then 9/11 happened. And that really blew everything out of the water once again. And we've been struggling ever since. We've never really gotten back to that.
We never stopped consuming. We never stopped feeding the oppressors. There's an absolute hierarchy. And when we continue to play the game,
all we're doing
is giving to them. So I would like to reference, if I may, the whole entire thing regarding the pipeline going to North Dakota. We saw people going there. They were purchasing fuel. They were using fuel. They were feeding.
All right. Listen, we've had this discussion for quite a while now, and I'd like to give some other people an opportunity.
Absolutely.
This is an important discussion. I completely disagree with you, but I'm glad again.
Disagreement is a basis for expanding conversation.
Okay. I mean, I don't completely disagree, but anyway, let's go to our next caller. I don't completely disagree. I agree with some aspects of it, but I think it's extremely limited perspective. I think there's a way to come together that people aren't really willing to do because they're not willing to examine our own deepest assumptions. And I might have my own that I'm not willing to examine, but I believe Samantha might have some that she might not be ready to examine and might take way more than just this conversation we just had here and wider conversations, which I think we needed to have 300 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago. And let alone come to grip with what I started talking about, which is the need for Euro-Americans to address the deep, deep underbelly of violence and total lack of awareness of so much that have set the stage. So who's our next caller? Edie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yay. I lived about 15 years near 82nd, and I've been involved, not just parenting would allow me, it's almost every, from, WTO, every protest, march, rally, public hearing that I can get involved with to help socioeconomic, gender, racial, environmental justice. And I want to bring some perspectives that I've not heard, not to say that others are invalid. I wanted to celebrate what I love, respect, and cherish about my anarchist friends in Black Bloc and explain some of the symbolism that I think more folks can find similarity with and agreement with the three Black Widow shopping cart floats. And I want to share a perspective that I have that might kind of broaden people out of this us versus them and kind of look at what's the common underlying values. I want to thank you so much for starting with the song and our choice. What are we going to do about this war? Are we going to be divided and conquered, fighting against each other, blaming each other, scapegoating each other? Or are we going to unite in our common ground? And that comes from my perspective. I am a devout Christian whose full-time job is to nurse and heal people through prayer. And I think there is no one more radical, more revolutionary, and more anarchist than Christ Jesus. And by that, I don't mean anarchism that has been used since the Haymarket Massacre to make people think that anarchists are violent troublemakers who all should be afraid of and disavow and turn and snitch on. But the idealism that we're each and all equal and of value and necessary and irreplaceable. The three shopping carts that were hauling water, both for mutual aid to help people might be dehydrated and for first aid to wash off the chemical weapons that are against the law, international law, to be used in war zones, much less there's no excuse for the cops to ever use them. Or to even own them or threaten them. So one shopping cart, one spider, Black Widow. Oh, the Black Widows are symbolic of being on almost everywhere. I don't know if they're in South, in Antarctica, but they're on every other continent at least. And in rural and urban areas hidden. There's the black and the red, the coloring. But there's a sense that those black widow spiders may be hidden and unappreciated. They may be falsely, as a field biologist, I can tell you that they're not as bad as people scare. There's a lot of propaganda about how horrible they are. They're really not.
No, as individuals, I find generally very, very sweet individuals. And they're, yeah, I mean, this the generalizations that come out in these sort of situations are just so unhelpful. And, you know, it could be that some of the tactics that are used in certain situations are also unhelpful. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to deny any of these possibilities.
Right. I choose some different tactics. But I wanted to broaden our concept. If we get into the us versus them mentality, then we lose our power, our own integrity and honesty. People are in our lives for us to learn from and to love and to bless, and not for us to deny that part of us that is reflected in them, but to examine that part of us that is in someone else and to appreciate that, to see the underlying needs and their feelings that we have in common. And let's not go into the good protester, bad protester. So the idea of the three black widows in general are that they protect the other insects that are beneficial ones, the other good spiders. They're not aggressive, but they will defend and protect themselves. Females are not wimps and victims. And they're not as dangerous and horrible as the bad press. And they are actually beneficial for humanity in getting rid of fleas, flies, mosquitoes.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this, because I totally missed that. There's both the good spider, bad spider thing, and then there's the beneficial insect. All right, listen. I think you may have called in yesterday as well, I'd like to give a couple. We only have 10 minutes left. I'd like to give other people a chance to call in. Go ahead. Say your last thought.
That the anarchist idealism of mutual aid, of solidarity with others who are oppressed, and not exploiting our white privilege, but having the mask so that no one is higher or above someone else. We understand and empathize with, and we do direct action, direct problem solving to help folks. The black mask, if we can scare about the protesters doing that, hey, the cops go in a gang mentality, and we need to hold the cops accountable so they have huge visible ID, last name, and their badge number on all parts and from all directions of all of their riot cop equipment, clothing, and weaponry.
Okay,
so we can hold them accountable as our public servants.
Okay, we got to move on. We got to move on. We got to move on because we got other callers. But thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it, Edie. And looks up. Joshua's next. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I was at the march on May Day, and I stayed through the whole thing and got a lot of footage. And, you know, I think, I'm so glad to hear this perspective from something other than like we hear on Abe and Joe, because, you know, I think why people from the radical perspective get frustrated is that, like, your first caller was saying, you know, I think the march would go well if these people wouldn't show up. Well, what does going well mean? You know, I know that there are these other groups there, and their goal is to get a permit and to march, and it is to be out in the street. It is to temporarily disrupt, you know, traffic and slow down. And I also don't think that, you know, the destruction is beneficial or helpful. But I also think that it's an incomplete picture just to look at that. You know, I talk to a lot of the people with the anarchy flags and the black bloc movement, and there are young people who don't see a future in this society. You know, it's an interesting thought to think, you know, of being able to be comfortable and be able to ride out the coattails of this American dream, you know, and have retirement and you know, all these things. And your version of how the rally and march goes well, and then a young person who sees, you know, more militarization, more confrontation in the future, and doesn't see a way out of that. I think that has to be acknowledged, because these people, these young people, they do have a accurate understanding of where the conflict comes from. They're anti-capitalist, and they get it. It's not, they don't have a scapegoat. Whether or not their tactics are effective, I think is definitely needs to be talked about. But, you know, they see these jewelry stores and this, you know, when the march goes away, it's business as usual, and they, you know, are struggling to find a future. Like many marginalized groups, again, they do have white privilege. It was made overwhelmingly of white people. I was caught that it's just not that easy, you know, just to say yes, nonviolence, no violence. And it's just also not a clear explanation. I don't know. That's kind of
I hear you. I always feel a little awkward sort of agreeing with some callers and sort of then being combative with others. I guess I can't avoid that I have a point of view. I certainly don't pretend to like some sort of neutral objective or certainly not omniscient. But I tend to find myself resonating with what you are saying. I don't want to, you know, privilege you, give you more time because of that. But anyway, so yeah, a lot of issues, you know, the whole violence, nonviolence is one of those, you know, again, there's a war between those who think violence is such a big deal or think one way about it, those who think about another. We just refuse to really address, you know, I've never heard a really thorough public discussion. I mean, I'm sure there have been endless ones of violence, nonviolence. It seems like, you know, oh, we can't, you know, we've already been through that, blah, blah, blah. But no, we have to, you know, we have to get back in and really address these things, that and so many other things. You know, everything you're saying is kind of how I opened up this feeling of no future I start just think about that and try to put myself in a young person's shoes. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that particular strategy, the way they did it on May Day was like the be-all and end-all. I'm sure there's many, but there needs to be, people need to sit down and hash these things out and feel that they can actually be heard and listened to and really have the time to really get into it. So, yeah, thank you for calling, and I won't give you a
chance. Can I just say one other quick
thing? Yeah, go ahead.
Really quick, you know, it was the scary thing for me was realizing when the police said it changed, they had taken away the permits, and then they referenced an ordinance saying that it had now become a riot, and they were authorizing a whole new range of force, and they even got specific. I have it on video. I wish I could quote it, but I believe
if for no other reason. Yeah, for no other reason, you're right. People should take, people of so-called progressives or of the left should take that very seriously. Very
Absolutely.
Seriously. Thank you so much for calling. Let's get Carol. We're almost out of time. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay. Oh, I had a lot more to say, but anyway, it's okay. I love listening to all this discussion. It's just wonderful. I love you, and I love KBOO. But what my take on it, I was at the back of the march, and I tend to do that. I'm a retired RN, and I try to help out if there is problems, and I've been marching since I was 18. I'm 68 now, and my take on it is it was peaceful, organized, until the Portland militarized police decided, instead of dealing with the few troublemakers, there was no Molotov cocktail or whatever. Nobody witnessed that, only the police. They concentrated on bullying peacefully marchers that were totally nonviolent and letting troublemakers run amok, breaking windows.
Well, that's a troublemakers might be a bit of a weighted thing.
Well,
we're trying to avoid.
No, okay, yeah. Okay. I'll reference troublemakers to people that march with violent actions. Nonviolent versus violent.
Well, even the whole idea of property damage as violence is also somewhat disputable. Go on, sorry.
I know, but I'm just saying that they, instead of trying to keep people in line, they went after and bullied the crowd of peaceful marchers.
And that seems to be a long standing.
And it was really, yeah. And I have pictures. I've been in marches since I'm 18. The one that scared me the most was Bush when he came to town years ago when he had militarized police. But we're getting there. This is going to be a police state if we keep. And I'm just saying, I went to the spring march, the climate march Saturday. I saw maybe five police, and they were just in regular gear, and they were smiling and waving at us.
Okay, we gotta run, Carol. We're out of time.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, the police are a big problem.
Hey, right on. I can't disagree with you. Thank you so much. Sorry to Linda and whoever else was just calling in to not be able to get you in. You got to call in earlier. But thank you so much. And thank you, Liam, for engineering. We got to get out of here. This is Paul Rowland, Wednesday Talk Radio.